Good evening and welcome to the Tuesday, September 9th, 2008 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. This will be a work session this evening. Before we begin our regularly printed agenda, just a quick announcement or two. First, I'll turn to North Carolina's first Costa Rican elected official, Costa Rican American elected official.
All right,
John Herrera.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Actually, according to NALEO, this is not to me, the National Association of Latino Elected Officials, in 2002, I became the first ever Costa Rican to hold political office in the United States, a Costa Rican immigrant.
Pura vida.
That's right. And I just want the Association of Costa Ricans in North Carolina wants to have the great honor to extend an invitation to all North Carolinians who has, well, to everybody, but especially to those who had a connection, had been to Costa Rica for their honeymoon, tourism, education exchange, research. I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of people that I have met through the years that somehow end up there. And I think there's a long history between Costa Rica and North Carolinians. So to honor and celebrate and cultivate those friendships, we are inviting everyone to come to a one-day festival, which is this coming Sunday, September 14th. We call it La Fiesta de la Paz, the Festival of Peace, in our democratic and peaceful tradition. So if you like tamales, if you like gallo pinto, and if you like all that good food that you ate while you were there, and want to meet people who have been there and exchange those stories, we're trying to document those stories that, you know, makes our community unique. So everybody's invited, and of course it's a family event, and everybody, and it's free, including for children. Thank you. Oh, that's good. By the way, it's all day. It's at the Lake Wheeler, most important part. It's at Lake Wheeler in Raleigh, off of 40, from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m.
September the 14th, which is this Sunday.
That's right.
All right. Great. Excellent. Well, with that, we'll turn to you, Mr. Manager, for our first item.
Okay. We do have one consent agenda item. That's
approval
of the minutes from the previous meetings of August 26th and September 2nd.
I have a correction to the August 26th meeting. On page 7 in the fourth or so paragraph that starts Alderman Coleman, in parentheses it says, about the EAB recommendations, it says, which were noted, approved by the BOA, which, of course, doesn't make sense the way it's written. I think what, Sarah, you meant to write, which were not approved by the BOA, but actually what I said is, which were not recommended by staff, which amounts to the same thing, but I'm pretty sure what I said was, which were not recommended by staff.
Check the tape.
Yes, someone could check the tape.
Or we can accept that as an amendment.
I'm willing to accept it. I'm just saying that.
Second that, then? You no longer want to move the...
No, I said I could accept it.
Okay.
It's
been moved and seconded that without amendment, adopt the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously. Mr. Manager.
Okay. This is an affordable housing special revenue fund administrative process and a modification of the approved use of the funds. And the purpose of this item is to present to the board a proposed administrative process for the use of affordable housing special revenue funds approved by the board on June 26, 2007, and to amend the list of uses to include the emergency single-family projects for citizens at 80% or less of the area median income. And James Harris, our Director of Economic and Community Development, has a presentation for the board.
Okay. You did approve, well, you did create an affordable housing fund on June 27th of 2007. And at that time, you approved a list of approved uses. And I've included that list in your agenda. What I found was there are a couple of things that were not included in there, and one would be the ability for us to assist people who have emergency housing repair needs in the town. From time to time, we'll get phone calls from people asking for assistance, and we don't have any funds to help them. So I'd like to modify that list and add that. We also have a request from the Orange Community Housing Corporation, the Land Trust. They want money from the towns and the county government to assist them in the maintenance of affordable housing units in the Land Trust. This is an opportunity for us to address that need if and when we have enough money to do that. So I'd like to amend that list to include those two things, if possible. The fund would be administered by...
Go ahead.
Okay. The funds would be administered by the Department of Community and Economic Development. We would not have an onerous process for them to go through. What I'm suggesting is that we allow them to write us the memorandum identifying the project, who the beneficiaries are, the location of the project, and how they'll meet the criteria of the fund. Once they do that, the staff would review that request with the assistance from our housing partners, from the Home Council. I'd like to use that group to assist me in that. Then we would make a recommendation to the board for approval. Okay. These funds would be used to support anyone that's at 80% of the median income or below, and for a household, and it would be graded by household, and that would include people at a household size of one at $39,950. Household size of two at 45,650, household size of three, 51,350, and four at 57,050. So those would be the income groups that we'd be looking to assist in this fund. And I, because this is a work session, I could stop at any point and answer any questions, I guess.
Okay, yeah, I'll ask you a couple questions at
okay.
this point. I guess one is, I'm interested to know how you came up with the 80% figure for the emergency situation. I know we use 80% a lot for the threshold for getting into the single-family housing, but, you know, do you have data that justified?
No, I used it because that's the figure that we used.
Okay. Is that the connected question is the in the home funds, we have an account, I guess you'd call it, for emergency housing repairs and that sort of thing. And does that also work, use the 80% figure?
It does, but you could set any figure, any.
Okay. And my understanding is, from when I was on the Home Council last year, was that it was difficult utilizing those funds because I guess it was hard to find contractors and that, you know, that there were funds available in that account that the county has. And am I remembering that correctly?
Not exactly. We always had more need than we had money, but it is hard to find contractors to do the work because they can do, what do you call it? They could go work on building.
Market rate.
Yeah. Bargain, market rate work and make more money. But
James, if I could also jump in on that, I think you know, my recollection, and this was as of a couple of years ago, is that there was a difference in the situation between the comprehensive owner-occupied repair program and money, which was definitely very cumbersome because the projects tended to be, you know, $40,000 and $50,000 and that type of thing, or there were people on the list who needed that scale of repairs. I think, on the other hand, you know, sometimes situations arise where what's needed is, you know, a new roof on a house, and that may be only $4,000, which mm-hmm. would simplify the contracting process quite a bit. Be one factor to consider. You wouldn't have to use a general contractor; you'd use a roofing contractor.
Under that program, if you went into the house and you identified any deficiencies, you had to do them all.
Right.
But using this fund, okay. we could just do the one particular thing.
Okay, so it might be that people who in the past have gone to that program and have actually then qualified for a more thorough repair, just because it's easier to get the work done, would come to Carrboro for like a single repair. Is that right? Am I like, is that a logical?
It's logical, but let me give you a real example, because I have a real example right now. I have a person in town who purchased a house that they can't afford to fix a failed sewer line. And I've looked everywhere for the money, and I've gone to JACA. JACA will give me $2,400 to help this family. The cost for repairing that line is actually $22,000.
Yeah.
So there's no way in the world that that family can do it.
And they can't get the money from the county for that, from the,
no,
the home?
There is this other problem with the county program, that the money available through the county program is exclusively for people, for senior citizens or people with disabilities.
Yeah.
So when there's no possibility that somebody who is 50 years old and not disabled but still in this type of situation to access those funds. And second of all, you have the problem that, as you alluded to earlier, there's actually a fairly significant backlog. I think the county staff is doing the best they can, but there's a fairly significant backlog in those projects. And obviously, when your sewer line has failed, it's not really about waiting 3 years to have it fixed.
Right.
Yeah. So my last question along those lines is, James, do you have a definition of emergency, or is it one of those you know it when you see it?
I'll know it when I see it, and I know one particular one because I've seen it.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Kind of
and smelled it even.
Right. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'd just like to say, having spent 6.5 years on the OWASA board, the cost of people connecting or repairing from the sewer line of OWASA to the house, it appears that it continues to grow. And so that has an effect on the affordability of people, even if they purchase a home that needs some work and then they have the sewer problem. And I think, you know, neither OWASA or the county or the towns have sufficient monies to fix every dwelling that has a sewer problem, but it would go a long way to maintaining affordable housing, I think.
And I think the other observation I would make from my professional experience a couple of years ago working in this area is that it is commonly the case that the sewer service is particularly deficient in what were traditionally lower income neighborhoods, because the sewer systems were never really properly developed in the first place. So you have situations where I think in the 1940s and 50s it was not uncommon on low budget projects to use basically tar paper. They made sewer laterals out of tar paper. They just rolled up tar paper, gommed it all together, and that was when your sewer line went down. Well, those they give way eventually, and that's in fact what's happened in the particular situation that James was describing earlier. Is this sewer lateral was never really correct in the first place, and it extends a very long distance because the sewer lines were never, you know, fully installed into that neighborhood for, you know, whatever political reasons may have been prevailing in the 1940s.
It had nothing to do with Tar Heel State.
I have no comment on what may or may not have happened 50 years ago in sewer line placement in Carborough, but it doesn't seem like it was entirely well done. So, you know, you just, certain situations like this arise.
Yeah.
I have a question. James, the loan, and maybe it's because I'm just kind of concentrating on the construction terminology, but is the loan, does it act almost as a second mortgage, like a home equity type loan? It's not the primary loan on the house.
It would be a second mortgage. And we call them deferred loans because we don't intend to collect them. They're like grants, but if they're deferred, we can track them because we put a lien on the properties in the county. If they do anything with the property, then we know. But when it comes to the housing trust fund, that's not the case because they don't own the property.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lease, and they place covenants on their properties. So in that case, it would be a covenant.
For the land trust.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that's notable is the way that James structured this proposal. I think it's important to realize that if you came and asked for a repair to be done and then turned around a year later and sold your house, and made a good, you know, and stood, you basically wouldn't be able to just walk away with a couple of $1,000s that the town of Carrboro had put in. You would have to pay that back.
Right.
Now, if you stay in the house for a long period of time, you may end up not having to pay the money back, but you wouldn't be able to basically rip off the taxpayer by just taking that additional equity.
And just, James, what do you, you know, given, you know, the kinds of storms that are occurring, the hurricanes and whatnot, what kinds of, I mean, is it conceivable that you could, you know, have a half dozen, a dozen, you know, requests for these kinds of funds? And is there a mechanism for choosing when you have, you know, serious needs that are, you know, when you have multiple serious needs?
Well, the board will have final say-so on any of them. Whenever I get them and review them, I'll bring them all to the board. It will be up to you as to who gets what. But if there's an emergency, like the sewer system, mm-hmm. or if there's a huge storm and water's pouring through the roof and the house happens to belong to a senior citizen, then, of course, we suggest that, you know, that might take some priority. And there is a historic house right now with the chimney separating from the building. And for years, we've known this, and we can't do anything about it mm-hmm. because there is no pot of funds to deal with it. So we know about these situations, but sometimes you just can't do anything about it. And you put them on a list to rise to the top, mm-hmm. you know, because all projects are a priority to somebody, especially if you're in the situation. So they don't like having to change positions.
Move the resolution.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passed unanimously.
Thanks, James.
Thanks, James. I know you've been working hard on this project, and I think a lot of people in Carrboro do appreciate it now and will appreciate it in the future. Long-range transportation plan.
Yes, this is the review of the 2035 long-range transportation plan alternatives. The Durham-Chapel Hill-Carrboro Metropolitan Planning Organization is preparing the 2035 long-range transportation plan, and a first step in the development of that plan is an evaluation of several transportation system alternatives that include a set of highway, transit, and other transportation improvements and a land use scenario. Comparison of the alternatives and their resulting performance measures is presented to the board for comments.
Adina, did you have any preliminary comments?
Okay.
Andy.
My name is Andy Henry. I work for City of Durham and staff at the Durham-Chapel Hill-Carrboro Metropolitan Planning Organization, and I'm here with planning manager Felix Nwoko. Tonight we just want to tell you a little bit about the MPO, about what the long-range transportation plan is, and about where we are in that process, and also to get your feedback tonight. So, as I said, I'm going to tell you about the MPO, what the long-range plan is, what the alternatives analysis is. That's where we are in the plan right now, what the next steps are, and get your comments. The DCN, we're responsible for all the long-range transportation planning in the area, Durham City and County and the urbanized areas of Orange County and Chatham County. And it's a federal mandate, okay? You have to have planning if you're going to spend the federal transportation funding. We have a policy board, the Transportation Advisory Committee, the TAC, and it's composed mostly of elected officials from the various jurisdictions, Orange, Durham County, Chatham County, the City of Durham, Hillsborough, Town of Carrboro, and Town of Chapel Hill. And there's a map. You can see the, here's the City of Durham, Town of Carrboro. Let me see. Oh, here we go. There's the Town of Carrboro and Chapel Hill. That purple area is the MPO boundary. So you can see it encompasses all of Durham County and, you know, maybe about half of Orange County, but the jurisdiction certainly in Orange County, and that northeast corner of Chatham County. That's our planning jurisdiction.
I assume the feds established that boundary by some process they have?
Yeah, every 10 years after the census, they begin look at the urbanized area, and it usually expands a little bit. Okay. We smooth it out. I think in the next year or so, we're going to entertain including some additional jurisdictions. We'll wait and see if those are added to our planning area. What's the long-range transportation plan? It's a list of highway, transit, other transportation projects that we're going to use to address the transportation needs that we have, and it goes out to the year 2035. That goes up about 25 years from now. The assumptions, it's based on the future land use, okay, so we look at the population, employment, we project it out to the year 2035, and we locate it around the different areas of the jurisdiction. And it has a fiscal constraint. That means the costs have to be covered by the revenues. We have to look at what our anticipated revenues are going to be for transportation through the year 2035, and those have to cover the cost. So we have to balance that.
And about, excuse me, how much of that cost in percentages is federal and how much of it is state?
I don't know, but I would say maybe 80% is federal. I'm looking towards Felix, but if that's something you're interested in, I can break that out. It's mostly federal funding, a little bit of local. Funding, if the projects are going to receive that federal and state funding, they have to be in the long-range transportation plan. When projects become funded, there's a planning document called the Transportation Improvement Program, TIP. You might be familiar with it. It looks out 7 years, and it looks at where the funding is going to come from for all the transportation projects. It has to be in this long-range plan.
Andy, can I ask a question? That map right before this, it shows, is it part of Orange County?
Yes.
So when we look at the figures in our packet, it includes all of Orange County, though?
Yes. What I failed to mention was we model the whole triangle area. When I say modeled is we're taking that population employment data, and then we're taking the transportation projects, putting it into a travel demand model. So we go off the outside the borders of our MPO. That's a good point.
But does that mean that monies can potentially be spent beyond that boundary? So, for example, in the corridor west of Hillsborough, where 40 and 85 connect, should we be looking at, express buses to, you know, the Buckhorn area? Would that be included?
Yeah, we would include that in the plan. We wouldn't stop right at the border. Okay. Just one additional thing. We use the plan a lot for planning. If you go through the development review process, if you have a new roadway alignment, any type of widenings, fixed guideway, for instance, some type of rail transit path there, they're going to go ahead and reserve the right-of-way for that in the future. This is the process we're using. You can see we started probably quite some time ago, over a year, on the goals and objectives for the plan. Then we went ahead and developed the population employment data for the future. Then we developed what's called the deficiency analysis. What we did there is we looked at the population employment, what kind of travel demand is that going to produce in the year 2035, and if we look at the roads we have today and anything that's been committed to, where are we going to see the congestion, where are we going to see problems? Right now we're doing the alternatives analysis, and I'll talk a little bit more about that right now. It's a series of different alternatives to meet our travel demand. After this, we're going to come up with a preferred option, and that's really a draft plan, a single plan that will get released in October by the TAC. That'll go through a two-month process. We could be back here. We're going to go back through all our public involvement process. By December, they'll approve a draft plan, December 2008. Then it's going to go through air quality conformity. That is, the emissions that are going to be produced by this plan by the transportation sector, does it meet the budget that the state has for air quality? And then the federal approval has to be done by June 15, 2009. Okay, that's the process. So we're right here, the alternatives. What is the alternatives analysis? It's really the first cut. We come up with a series of several alternatives, which are a series of projects, and we look at those and see how those meet the travel demand that we have. And we also use it to go out, meet with the different local elected officials, with the public, to get their feedback. What are the alternatives? We had quite a few. If you look here, right here, this column, these are the different, really, transportation systems. We have comprehensive transportation plan that really goes out beyond 2035. That includes all the projects we're looking at. That's like everyone calls it everything but the kitchen sink. We have one intensive highway. We've used a lot of highways, a lot of high occupancy vehicle lanes, a lot of road widenings to try to meet our travel demand. Fixed guideway, we have here less highway, okay, much less highway. We use rail transit. Rail transit in this area would include the rail transit running between UNC Chapel Hill, downtown Durham, and from there down to Raleigh. Bus transit is another one, less highway, no fixed guideway. We improve the bus service and the express bus service to the outlying areas. In modern multimodal, we try to balance things a little bit more between the fixed skyway transit and the highway. We also use some different land use scenarios on these options. I'll give you one example here. Fixed guideway, we have one here called transit nodes. We took our baseline land use, and we said, well, what would happen if we moved some of the population employment around the transit stations that we have in the fixed guideway? So this is a matrix of the different alternatives we have. Just real briefly, you probably got a rather thick report. I see one that's got the green cover. That's the alternatives analysis. Just want to tell you what you're going to find in there. You're going to find the performance measures for the different alternatives. That's average travel time, vehicle miles traveled, level of congestion. You're going to have congestion maps. It'll show you the different road segments and what the level of congestion is there. Evaluation measures, they're similar to performance measures, just more detailed. There's also a financial plan. I mentioned that we have to have the fiscal constraint. We have to see if it's balanced. What this does is it looks at the revenues that we have estimated. This is preliminary now. We haven't sharpened our pencils and got exact figures, but what we estimate it's going to be for each of the different alternatives and what the costs are going to be, and to show what the difference is. And you can see right now in these alternatives, we've loaded these up pretty much, so we're running quite a deficit on all of them except the moderate multimodal. Okay. We also in the report talk about some of the local options for sales tax and for real estate transfer tax that might be available to fund that deficit. There's also project maps, a detailed list of projects, and there's also more information on the land use scenarios. Okay, so that's what you have in the report. I'm just going to real briefly go over this map isn't as clear as I was hoping it would be. These are some of the major projects over on this side over near Carrboro. These are the major highway projects. There aren't too many over in Carrboro. There's some widenings, Homestead Road, Estes Drive, Smith Level Road improvements. Those are really the only so-called, I guess, widenings or improvements you have on the roads. I listed some others that are close by. HOV lanes is another alternative up on I-40 that was considered, that it's being considered over in this area. And you have a widening over at NC-54, 15501, and then along Fordham Boulevard here in Chapel Hill. Not quite in Carrboro, but certainly affects some of the people that commute in and out of this area. This is a transit map. Let's see. Rail transit, you don't have any rail transit coming into Carrboro. This is a commuter rail that's being looked at. And then this is the rail transit that goes from UNC Chapel Hill along the 15501 corridor over to downtown Durham. There's some express bus. Those are the thick blue lines. And on a lot of the local service, those are the thin blue lines, there's improved bus headways, that is the time between the buses, service improvements that sometimes you know don't necessarily see on a map because sometimes you don't need route expansion, you just need better service.
Before you move to the next one, I know that you're here to also find out our interests, and folks in Carrboro for a really long time have been interested in a rail spur from Hillsboro. I mean, we've got the train station sitting right here. We've got the rail. Why is that not included in the projections?
Yeah, I think it's not included just because we were probably looking to hit the highest population, highest employment places. So it was just ended here. This is the proposed Carolina North area. But if it's a comment you'd like to make, we can
well, yeah, I mean, conversation started back in June with Hillsborough and connecting Hillsborough with Durham. And once again, folks in Carrboro are, you know, asking, well, why not here in Carrboro since we have a population, a dense population of 18,000, you know, within a small area and we're sitting right on top of rail, why wouldn't we be part of a light rail connection to Hillsborough?
I'll take a look. A lot of times for the what we call the fixed guideway, the rail transit, and some of the larger projects like HOV, they come to us from other studies. And I know North Carolina Rail the state agency is currently, I don't know if they finished it, but they're doing a commuter rail study through the Triangle. And I'd have to go back and look and see if in their study it ended there, Carolina North, or whether it comes down into Carrboro. Yeah. So that would be one.
Because I know when the conversation, you know, cropped up about Hillsborough and the potential for the rail from Durham to Hillsborough, which is heavier rail, folks were like, well, wait a minute, you know, if Carrboro could connect, then that would make Carrboro contiguous not only to Durham, but Raleigh and beyond. So mm-hmm. there's definite interest.
Okay.
And I'm just going to... a partial, I think, answer to your question is that the transit systems that are presented in this plan are based on, as Andy was saying, some other plans, one of that being the long-range transit plan that we've been working on with Chapel Hill and the university. And in that plan, the rail does not extend down or use this rail line based on opinions expressed by the university to not want that to be used for any type of commuter rail or any kind of sort of passenger rail system. So that's why I
what
think...
What do they want to use it for?
Their coal trains. I don't think they want to mix the two different uses. So that's one of the reasons why right now this is kind of ending, why Carrboro has not seen rail.
Well, I understand that it couldn't be the same rail. I understand that the weight of it's different, but that doesn't mean that a guideway couldn't be run parallel to it or, you know, whatever. I mean, I just think it's important for us to be able to connect that way, especially when we look at 2035. You know, so,
I agree with you. One thing that you don't see on this map that we have some rail, what we call rail preservation corridors, and maybe if this line isn't extended down into Carrboro, maybe we can add that to our rail preservation because. I think the most important thing you pointed out, it's way off in the future, but it's something we don't want to lose because the right-of-way and the corridors are something that you can really never get back if you
right.
lose access to them. So that might be one approach if we don't analyze or have a rail corridor going down there, rail transit corridor, at least we can make that part of a preservation so there's a possibility of keeping that open should the power plant ever shut down or whatever it might be.
Maybe they won't use coal.
Well, this plan's only 27 years into the future now.
Right. They're going to be switching to ferry power.
I also put the bicycle projects map here. Again, I apologize for the quality of this map. There's on-road bicycle facilities or those purplish lines there, and we also have regional bicycle facilities. They're very much the same. It's just that the regional ones are going to have more impact in getting moving people between the different communities. Just talk about the next steps. We're going to get the public feedback. As I said, we're going to develop a preferred option. And again, what you've seen here, these alternatives, you can see we put them together modal-wise. We have the fixed guideway, intensive highway. We're not going to take one of those and lock, stock, and barrel march it forward and present it as our preferred option. What we'll do is we'll take projects from the various alternatives here to come up with our draft or our preferred option. And we hope to release that October 8th, have the TAC release that. It'll go through, again, a two-month public input process. If you want, we can come back here again with that plan, present that, and get your feedback. We'd certainly be happy to do that. And then, as I said before, in December, we'd hope to release our draft 2030 LRTP, and then it goes through air quality. So to look in the near future, we want to get that preferred option and develop it and release it, and then come back and get the public's input and local officials.
Dan.
Yeah, Andy, my question's about the land use planning process. And I mean, clearly, you know, once a goal is adopted in this plan, it had then each local government has to adopt zoning and ordinances to achieve those objectives. And so I guess my question is how this plan interacts and the MPO interacts with local governments in doing that. And just to throw out the example that's given in here under both scenario 4 and 5, the one Carborough example is the possibility of some kind of transit-oriented development on NC-54 as a corridor. And to the best of my knowledge, we haven't talked about that, and I don't believe we have that as a goal. Correct me, anyone, if I'm wrong on that. So, you know, we'd have a substantial local public process to hear from our citizens and think about how things in our town fit together before agreeing that that example was the right one, even if in principle we agree that transit compact zone is our preferred scenario. So right. Do you understand my question?
Yeah, I do. You can see here those are the land use scenarios going across top. The baseline is based on your current land use plan mm-hmm. and policies. And then, as you said, we made some assumptions about some of the other scenarios. Corridor, we pulled population employment up along the major corridors, the transit nodes where we moved around the transit stations. The MPO or the TAC certainly can't make land use policy, but the TAC is composed of elected officials from the other jurisdictions, and I think the MPO's powers encourage the other jurisdictions to make land use changes, if that's the way we wanted to go and try to do the transit nodes land use scenario. I guess the real point is we're just trying to show that there are some impacts. There's some passenger trips gained when you use those different scenarios. Did that answer your question? I mean, the MPO doesn't, of course, the local jurisdictions have the legislative authority for zoning and, uh-huh. and for the development review process.
But, I mean, I guess let me be more specific. So once this plan is adopted through 2035, and let's say one of these scenarios is implemented through the plan, then does that mean that there are going to be assumptions about what's going to happen in each municipality in terms of land use that differs from current zoning and regulation between now and 2035?
I think general assumptions, but not real specific assumptions.
Okay.
There'd be some general assumptions.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's helpful.
We'll just keep coming down this way.
Andy, is the idea that it will ultimately agree on or recommend one of these alternatives, or is it we can come up with a hybrid of these alternatives, or is it that some jurisdictions will focus on one and some others, or what's coming out of this?
There'd be a single hybrid.
For the whole MPO?
For the whole MPO, that's right.
So one of these for the whole MPO?
It'll be a hybrid of these. One of these won't come forward. In fact, when you look, this is just an example, but it shows you a worksheet. This shows you the difference between revenue, the revenue minus the cost minus the revenue, excuse me. And you can see this is in billions of dollars. So we don't have these alternatives balanced. These alternatives are used mainly to show us what impact fixed guideway rail has on providing meeting transportation demand, what impact highways have, et cetera. We're going to have to come up with a hybrid that's balanced, not only modally, with not just highways, but we need to have our transit, perhaps fixed guideway transit in there, bicycle, pedestrian, but also it has to be balanced as far as the fiscal side is.
Okay.
And it has to meet the air quality requirements as well.
That's right.
Well, sounds easy enough. could you slide over to the map that showed the various bicycle facilities? I guess two things. One is that I think without getting into a great deal of specifics right here, because we don't need to, it seems to me that there are two different state designated bicycle routes that come through the Chapel Hill Carrboro area. Perhaps there are more than two, I'm not sure. But I believe only one of those routes is marked on there in orange as being sort of, yeah, imagined or proposed for regional bicycle facilities. And it seems to me that this would just be, especially in Orange County, but I would hope in the entire MPO that we would look at where the designated state bicycle routes are and consider that those should be, regional bicycle facilities, we move to that regional bicycle facilities category. And I think specifically, for example, Mount Carmel Church Road is one specific example of that. But if we could just look across the MPO at that, yeah, that purple line going down that way.
Yeah. That's a good hill to climb to.
Well, either that or get the state to reroute the bicycle route. I don't know, but it just seems to me.
I like the hill. I mean, you want to get in shape.
It just seems to me that to be logical to kind of integrate our plan with designated routes that the state has identified is one comment. The other comment is, and this goes back to my question about who defines the boundaries of the MPO. Can you click back over to the map, to a map that shows the MPO boundaries that you started off with. So you see how the MPO boundary actually has basically in that area that's north of Carrboro and south of Hillsboro, there's sort of a wedge that comes in a little chunk of land between the two towns that's not a part of the MPO. I think it follows right there along. Yeah, exactly. The boundary follows right along Old 86 through there, I think, or I assume that's what I'm looking at. And it seems to me that your regional plan, and I think the adopted Orange County plan for bicycling calls for bicycle facilities to be directly on Old Highway 86. Yeah. Connecting all the way from Carrboro into downtown Hillsboro. And I just want to throw out the thought that that may not literally be the best way to do it. That Old 86 by its nature is just not that bicycle friendly of a facility. And there are a series of parallel roads just to the west, like Union Grove Church Road, and on up that way, there is a whole other way to get to Hillsboro that takes you up through Orange Grove Road, but it's outside the MPO planning area. So I don't know that you need to make any change for the purpose of your study here, but I want to lay it out on the table that I think we ought to have a discussion between Carrboro, Hillsboro, and Orange County at some point about whether it would be better to designate a slightly different route that takes people off of, the bicycle improvements off of the most heavily traveled motor vehicle corridor and put them in a place where it would be safer and more pleasant to ride. And hopefully, you know, after the next census or something, that boundary will move over a little bit and we'll capture inside the MPO area a little bit more of that missing wedge so that projects along there would be eligible for MPO funding.
I think I might be mistaken, but in the report, we may show all the bicycle routes in Orange County, even though, you know, only a portion is in the MPO's planning jurisdiction. But we'll take a look at that. You're talking about Orange Factory and that Union Grove Church. And
yeah, Union Grove Church Road and
that big hill you go up there.
Borland Road and connecting up towards Orange Grove and maybe making improvements on Orange Grove going into Hillsboro as opposed to Old 86. It's not going to change a lot in terms of the numbers that you're working with, but I just, here we are discussing
it. Well, and it also might be helpful because they've got the new high school right off Orange Grove right there.
That's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
So it could be useful for the high school, Cedar Ridge.
I just wanted to put it out there.
Okay.
I
have a question. The MPO directly next door to ours, is there any discussion about, because as you see that little part that goes right around Hillsboro and the where none of the MPO, it appears, is also, if you come down where you are now, where 54 comes in, and there's a tremendous amount of traffic of people who live in Alamance County, but work at the hospital and the university, because it's a 25-mile, you know, so about 30-minute ride. And I guess my question is there any, when the MPO is making this 2035 planning, whether or not there's any plans to connect it bus routes? Because it seems to me it'd be natural to have a bus route from Graham and or Burlington to Carrboro or Chapel Hill when there really isn't one now, and it seems to me if you get more people off of the road coming into the boundary area where you're going to evaluate the air quality, that's one way to improve the air quality. And I know what the air quality is for the adjacent MPO, but I know if you did that for our MPO, it would seem to me that, you know, our air quality would improve. Just anecdotally know that there are a lot of people that live in Alamance County but work in Chapel Hill at the hospital because it's the largest employer other than Blue Cross Blue Shield. And so I'm just wondering, have there been any discussions? Is that done on a statewide basis or is that done in between MPOs? And I would just throw that comment out, you know, to you. Because there are a plethora of people coming in from Mevin in that area. Mm-hmm.
The university is evaluating that question independently in terms of, because, you know, they know where everyone who comes to campus or
right.
to the hospital originates. And so that's something we've been talking about at the transit partners, is sort of getting some data from the university and whether the university would provide some kind of service or whether it would be through Chapel Hill Transit or, you know, what means might begin to address that. And also, as this map indicates, one of the express bus routes that we're looking at out of the long-range transit study would originate at the Carrboro Plaza park and ride. I mean, that still leaves people with all that long commute
right.
in from Alamance, so there ought to be a broader
right.
possibility, but there
right.
is at least it would connect to that
right.
express bus and get people more quickly down to campus.
But Joel, in regard to your specific concern, the Planning Board really talked about this exact item the other night for quite a while, and number 10 on the Planning Board recommendations, when they looked at the scenarios, in particular, mm-hmm. I think they were looking at the transit maybe scenario,
right.
They emphasized that they found missing from the alternatives analysis report recognition of the impacts of pass-through traffic from the west.
Right.
And they could see
yeah.
it covered on all the other mm-hmm. directions, but not from that in the long-term analysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do, in the alternatives, we do have express bus service going on NC-54. And I want to say this is Greensboro Road coming here?
Jones
yes.
Ferry.
Jones Ferry.
And then it goes
right. Old Greensboro.
Right. Greensboro out to Snow Hill or something. And then there's also express bus up to Hillsboro.
Right.
In
right.
the planning. Mm-hmm. And we do coordinate with the other MPO out there. It's called Alamance Graham MPO. And they do have air quality issues just like we do. So they're in the same air quality shed, too. If one of us doesn't make it,
yeah.
we all don't make it.
Right.
So.
And, you know, that's just a suggestion because I think when they are separate for planning purposes, when you look at the overall picture, you know, the practical effect is that there are people who are getting in their cars and driving every day mm-hmm. to the hospital, you know. And so, you know, my aunt worked at the hospital for 30 years. And so, but she lived in Durham. So theoretically, if you did that now, you could take the bus from Durham and come to work, at least in daytime, obviously,
I believe Jack Hill Transit has a job access reverse commute grant to start the service between, express service between Pittsboro and Chapel Hill. And is it Hillsborough and Chapel Hill, or is it Mebane? Do you remember? Hillsborough and Chapel Hill, yeah.
So that's just the suggestion that, you know, we're the most far west municipality, and that's just one thing to think about.
Do you have anything to add there?
No, that was where I was going with my question about Buckhorn. Same thing, because by 2035, that corridor is going to be pretty intense. But I think that the question really comes back to the question of the boundaries and whether or not, you know, how much beyond those boundaries we're going to be able to extend to the populations that need to transport in and out. So.
We don't normally have public comment at our work session meetings, but there is one person here who wanted to make a brief comment. So if the board's willing, Ellen Perry, if you could come up to Mike. Thanks. Actually, maybe you should stick around because she's probably going to ask you a penetrating question.
I will. So you need to ask.
I tried to get
out. Hey, sorry, kiddo. Okay, from the airport to Chapel Hill, there is nothing on Sunday at all. At nothing. I have looked, hiding her hair for something. There is nothing for me to get back from the airport to Chapel Hill. At least I can roll back home. But there's nothing for me. And I was wondering if you all could put your heads together and come up with an idea about how we can expand the paratransit system a little bit more for Sunday service. Because I am traveling now, and I have to get back.
On other days of the week, do you use Triangle Transit services, and they don't provide that service on Sunday?
Nope. Nothing. They don't provide any service on Sunday at all. Nothing.
Okay. Two things. First, on that, I think we ought to do we have a representative on the TTA board? We don't.
No.
But Chapel Hill does.
Yeah, Bill Strong. Yeah.
Strong does. If it's the pleasure of the board, I will write a letter to the Triangle Transit Board of Directors and ask them to address that question, what would it take, and mm-hmm. when do they anticipate that it may be possible to begin providing paratransit service on Sundays. So if y'all look agreeable to that, mm-hmm. I will write a letter, or better yet, I'll make Charmin write a letter
but you'll sign.
But I'll sign it. I'll edit it and sign it to the Triangle Transit Board, asking those sorts of questions about what would it take and when could we make it happen.
There's no accessible cab around here either. And I found an accessible cab up in Louisville, Kentucky, and also Indianapolis, Indiana.
Well, let me come back to that in a moment. But I think the other question, I'm assuming, Andy, that in terms of your long-range transportation plan, that the question of paratransit is sort of subsumed within your plan, is sort of subsumed within the various bus services and other public transportation that's included in that. Part of your model. Okay. Taxis, I can't answer that question off the top of my head, but I particularly when it comes to the airport, I think it is an issue. I don't know whether there's one exclusive taxi vendor out at the airport,
right.
And are you telling me that among others they don't have? So
nothing.
I guess you have to come to the airport.
Yeah. And
who?
I would, To the airport authority about that. And I guess if they're going to force us to use this one particular taxi company, the least thing that they could do is be comprehensive in the service that's available.
Right, right.
All right, so two letters coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen.
All righty.
Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
All right. Are there any other comments on the LRTP from the board?
No.
Yeah, well, we need to decide whether we're going to forward any comments through this resolution.
Well, I think we should forward the comments you heard. I think one of the comments is to look at, you know, the adjacent bus service or, adjacent bus service both in Buckhorn and between Graham and Burlington and Carver. I think you heard that there is a proposal with regard to making a better bikeway for Union Grove and Hillsboro, not Old A6, but
alternative.
An alternative. Oh, I'm sorry.
Presumably Sarah has a record of
original.
So you want to? Yeah, I'm fine with that. But I want to bring up a couple other things then.
I also would like to see Carver weigh in on the fact that we would really like a fixed guideway, some kind of light rail considered. Okay. I don't care if UNC is not happy about that. It's something that folks here really would like to see happen.
You're saying the commuter rail issue kind of south of Carolina.
Absolutely.
North. Okay. And
I have two things I want us to look at in the report. The first is on, if we look at page 1-5, where they have the summary of the alternatives. And I think there's a question, you know, whether or not we want to endorse any of these particular alternatives. And if so, which one? And it also, I mean, related to that, I think there's a question of the cost and what the tax burden is going to be and also what the likelihood is of us ever being able to pay for perhaps some of the more expensive or comprehensive ones. And I guess one point I want to make without actually recommending this, but just to kind of put one frame on the discussion, is I think if we're looking strictly for service within Carrboro and to destinations from Carrboro, direct service, that it's actually the intensive bus transit that's going to provide the most improvement for people in Carrboro, the most access for us. Because, I mean, even including, you know, Randy's admonition for a fixed guideway, the fact is we're not going to get one, certainly not in the life of this plan. So, you know, and I think, you know, philosophically, we may believe that the light rail from Raleigh to Durham and from Durham to Chapel Hill are very important, but I think, you know, part of what we need to discuss is in terms of, for our own citizens, the service that people in Carrboro need,
right.
Is that where we want to advocate for resources to go, or do we really want to see resources going to maximum improvement of bus service, the regular, the express, and the regional, to help people in Carrboro get to local and regional destinations?
Well, I guess my comment would be, if we don't ever propose a fixed guideway, then no one's going to consider it. That's the first thing. No matter how much it costs, if you don't propose it in the plan, it's going to get it won't be in there. The second thing is, I think, you know, I'm in agreement that there needs to be intensive bus, you know, more intensive bus transit and what have you to other municipalities in the triangle. But I think if you don't include it, then it's not going to get discussed, and then people continually say, well, you know, we can't really plan for it, when we know that we're running out of oil, both domestic and foreign, and that the capacity for the country and even North Carolina to rely on, you know, we can mark off intensive highway because we know that we're pretty much not for that. But I think we do need to at least propose long-term. I mean, people never thought that light rail would start in Mecklenburg County, mm-hmm. and they have some form of it. And I think if we ask for it now, maybe when my grandchildren are running around or visiting me, there will be light rail, because I think that's a 25-year, 35-year, 40-year plan. But if you don't ever recommend it, then we continue to do the same thing we're doing now, expecting to get different results. And it's not going to happen. You know,
I wonder in that light if it makes sense. If you look at the comprehensive, the second line, mm-hmm. and basically under transit and fixed guideway, that has both those elements, the bus service and the fixed guideway. But I think the comment we could pass along would be the comprehensive, but with minimizing investment in the highway column and maximizing in the two transit columns. Because it seems like, I mean, from the point of view here, there's a whole lot of highway mm-hmm. in there that you know, that we're not really interested in supporting.
Right. Well, the only thing that I would modify that is to throw in the last one for moderate multimodal mm-hmm. into the fixed sort of guideway, mm-hmm. because you do really want commuter rail from Burlington to Raleigh, Selma to Durham. You actually do want it, because if we get more people off, you know, because you have that growth in Johnston County. Mm-hmm. If we get more people off I-40, then, again, we will accomplish one of those goals of improving air quality and being more efficient with the use of the resources that we have long term. And so that would be the only, you know, I would use that little box in the far corner and drop it right under there and say commuter rail as well, if possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, where the money is going to come from, that's a whole other discussion. But
we'll print it.
Yeah, you get in trouble for that. The Treasury Department frowns on printing your own money.
So is everyone comfortable with that? Basically, the idea of the comprehensive plan minimizing the highway investment and adding the commuter rail.
Yes.
That's the second.
The second,
there, where it's
the CTP.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, CTP is right. Comprehensive transportation.
Yes, yeah, we do need a motion.
I already had it circled.
Okay.
Well, the motion is going to be for everything we've discussed, right?
Unless right. But including specifically that.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Including specifically that.
Then okay. The other thing I thought we should talk about is on page 3-3 and 3-4. Which are the revenue estimates, the revenue sources. And I think we need to weigh, this is our opportunity to weigh in on what our preferred revenue options would be. And I think we should do so, because I think if we leave it to others, we're not going to like the outcome necessarily. So I guess.
What specifically do you want to suggest?
I guess I would suggest the motor fuel, the vehicle registration, and the rental car tax as ways to to shift the costs onto automobile use. I think sales tax, is going to be a popular suggestion, but I think it's very regressive. And I think the property tax and the income tax wouldn't go anywhere anyway, at least not at anything like the current political climate. So.
Are we charging the max already on vehicle registration fees?
Right, but the idea is that this would be
an additional
$20 is what they're suggesting here. And so that would be signed the legislature.
That would have to be an additional.
Right.
All of this would have to.
Right.
Almost
yeah,
all of
this
involves some legislative.
That's right.
Approval.
Well, I guess my only issue is that with the motor fuel tax is we're seeing, and the statistics show that you're seeing a decrease in the amount of revenues that you get from motor fuel taxes, because people are driving less because gas is expensive, And so I think before we suggest that, we need to think of a revenue source that is somewhat more stable. Now, what that is, I don't know. But I don't know if...
Maybe we could ask Andy what kind of assumptions are built into the projections under that in terms of how much driving people are going to do. Andy, are you able to speak to that?
I can't remember.
Andy has memorized the entire report.
I can't remember, but you're correct. There are assumptions about the amount of driving people would do under that scenario. Motor fuels taxes, I'm almost certain, is just based on the level of driving there is right now. So as the population grew, you had more driving there. If you do, you're going to increase use of motor fuels.
But is it also assuming increased fuel efficiency, which I think we all expect?
No.
Okay. So those are optimistic assumptions.
But, I mean, any of this that would require...
But it actually should decrease over time.
Legislature.
Shouldn't it?
Require a local referendum for approval. That's what this thing says.
Where does it say that?
I was just asking...
Hold on. Local option revenue estimates.
Right. The sales and real estate taxes require... local referendum, but I don't think the motor fuels tax and the vehicle registration, I don't think there was that.
Well, that would still be a bill, but not a referendum.
Right. Yeah. That was John's
but
question.
I was asking, you know, over the period of the next even 10 years, wouldn't the motor vehicle fuel, wouldn't the amount being used decrease significantly? I mean, we will start to see a decrease with greater use of hybrids, electric cars, whatever. So I don't know if that's how viable that is in the long run.
But, you know, we're going to revisit this also in 5 years.
Right.
Well, so, I guess my reservation about weighing in on a topic, if I can give sort of a counterpoint, is that while I share your concerns about using the sales tax, not just because it's regressive, but because, quite frankly, we have a fairly high sales tax, in my estimation, across North Carolina. The possibility that's being seriously discussed right now is for an increase in the sales tax in the three county area to support these types of activities. And while that's not ideal, I think the reality is it's that or we're not doing it. or at least that we're not doing it until we get to a point where we can agree on some other funding source, and that it's difficult enough already to try and get any agreement on the least controversial type of tax. So I don't know. I mean, I think the whole issue is important enough, and the service that's to be provided by subsidizing public transportation with sales tax is a progressive enough service that, you know, it may just be worth the trade-off simply for the fact that, you know, if the stack's recommendations aren't going to be implemented via sales tax, then they're just not going to be implemented at all. At least that's kind of how I see the situation right now. Maybe I'm being overly pessimistic, but...
Well... You assume that there's going to be enough sales tax to even pay for what they're doing.
Well, I know.
I guess, Mark.
I'm the most pessimistic.
I don't think our advocating something else is going to prevent that, what I agree is the most likely outcome.
Well, and I guess all I'm just trying to get at is I'm fine with endorsing some of these revenue options, but I'm not really willing to say that any of them is out of the question as far as I'm concerned. You see what I'm saying? But I think it makes sense to, I don't have a problem with saying we particularly think the motor fuels tax, vehicle registration fee, and car, rental car tax ought to be the primary revenue sources for it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's fine.
That makes sense. Everyone else okay with that?
No, I just don't think the motor vehicle tax is going to work, but, you know, If we revisit it in 5 years, I can mention it. I can come as a citizen and talk about it again. Then leave.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. No problem, right? You got that motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes unanimously. All right. Andy, Felix, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All of your work.
Thank you.
The stuff. We have one personnel matter to discuss. Is there a motion to?
Can I raise one matter from the board before we do that?
Yes.
Something I talked with Steve about earlier, and he just wanted me to get a motion from the board on this. We have authority for campaign contribute campaign finance regulation, and I'd like us to have Steve schedule a public hearing on that bill.
When would we schedule the public hearing?
Sometime in the next few months.
Oh, okay. You're talking about 08 or 09?
I'm talking about 08.
Is that, Mr. Manager, does it seem realistic to put that on a public hearing in this calendar year?
I think so. Probably November would be the best time. We could do it in October, but November would work best.
We may be all hot around the collar about
one of the concerns that came
topic
up
around November
in the legislature, and it's kind of moot point because, you know, we can do it whenever and now since we have the authority, but to give candidates ample notice prior to filing for next year.
That's true.
So I just felt like, you know, I think November,
I don't have a problem.
People are already going to be thinking about the race in some cases.
Okay.
Let's just have it on a day that we can get the maximum amount of people coming out.
Okay.
Do we need to vote on that?
Yeah.
I'll second it then.
So we moved and seconded. We asked the manager to bring us a proposed, discussion of public hearing on campaign financing issues. All those in favor, signify.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
I'll be back in a minute. Just go ahead for the motion.
Okay. And is there a motion to go into closed session to discuss personnel issues?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.